welcome to Sabbath Hour. We had 2.5 hours this morning on the subject of money. I was pretty hard on our listeners, but they kept coming back. We had a pretty good chat room group. So we'll see. I won't be as hard on your group, but I'll tell them a little bit more about what money is all about and what it's not all about. And one of the reasons why we address this issue from the point of view of the church is found in a quote by John Adams in a letter to Thomas Jefferson, which says, "All the perplexities, confusion, and distress in America rise from downright ignorance of the nature of coin, credit, and what he calls circulation." And I think a lot of that is still true to this day, which is what I often find out in history, is that most of the problems we've had before, and before that, and before that. And we need to understand that if we don't go and learn about the problem and what really worked as a solution, we're never going to find a real solution for any of the problems we have today. And in the study of history is really more a study of our future, because history will repeat itself. And we can't do anything about that, but what we can do is determine what side of the equation of history we're going to be on. The part that is swallowed up and devoured and enslaved and abused and drained, or the part that is set free. Because that's what Abraham, Moses, and Jesus Christ were all about. They were actually talking about how to set men free in the present world that we live in the reality in which we exist, to set them free in spirit and in truth, not just set you free for some time after you die. Christ is very clear, the kingdom of heaven is for the living, not for the dead. He was very clear that he was taking the kingdom away from some people who were ruling over the people, and he was going to give it to ones that bore fruit. Well, how do you bear fruit in a free government? Well, the people become more virtuous, more diligent, more caring, more efficient. And in the modern scheme of government, people are becoming weaker and less efficient, less moral. And that's because we have designed a government after the government of Cain, Lamech, Nimrod, and the city-states, Pharaoh, and what Caesar turned Rome into, and not designed it according to the ways of Abraham, Moses, Jesus Christ, John the Baptist, and other men who created pure republics in their lifetime, by simply telling people how government works. Well, one major part of government today is money, so we're going to talk a lot about money. One of the definitions of money is any medium of exchange that is widely accepted in payment for goods and services and in settlement of debts. Now, what's the difference between payment and settlements of debts? Wouldn't it be payments for goods or payments of debt? No, because most of the money that we use today to pay debts with, by law, cannot pay debts. You don't pay a debt with a note. You cannot pay a debt with a note. Stanek versus White. It's just not the reality. A note is a note, a promise to pay. So if you give somebody a note in payment to settle a debt between you and them, you still haven't paid that debt until the note is realized into some sort of substantive payment. And this is one of the great problems with the modern so-called money system that we have. It settles debt, but it does not pay debt, so a portion of the debt remains. And so, therefore, nobody owns their home, nobody owns their house, nobody owns their car. Nobody owns anything. That's one aspect of the money system that we have created amongst ourselves today. And we have created it because our fathers and forefathers have elected congressmen and senators, and they've created a Federal Reserve, and the Federal Reserve prints money, and those monies have an obligation with them. And because of that and other subsequent acts of the people, by virtue of the authority of acts of the government, people have gone back into the bondage of Egypt. They've become collateral for debt. And I talked about it on the earlier shows today about it used to be that we had a human resource department because we were all human resources. We went from free men to being resources. Well, now I actually find in talking with people working for the government, postal employees and Forest Service workers, they're now referring to the employees not simply human resources, but actually capital. They even call them human capital. You don't want to be human capital. There's not a big stretch of imagination between human capital and cattle. That's what people have become. They've become human capital. And the money system is very much a part of that. Ultimately, the core of the problem is us, as individual spiritual and physical creatures upon the earth, that we haven't been tending to the weightier matters that Jesus listed off. And nobody seems to know what he said because none of the preachers address that. But so we're going to, again, I said, we're going to focus on money. Money is the just medium of measure of all commutable things. For by the medium of money, a convenient and just estimation of all things is made. And I'm quoting here from an article that we wrote, and that article is quoting from many other articles. That particular one is actually a translation of, I won't give you the Latin, but it's a translation of a Latin phrase to understand money, because they were having trouble understanding it back in the days of the Caesars, because they eventually thought, well, we can take all the silver out of the silver coin, and we'll just make them out of iron coin, and they'll still be just as valuable. Well, that didn't work very good, and runaway inflation eventually caused mass starvation and economic collapse. But it was great for the Christians, because the Christians knew that that was a bunch of hooey. Christians today, what we call Christians or modern Christians, they haven't got a clue, because their ministers have all been asleep at the pulpit and everybody else went to sleep in the pews. And so, you know, I'm out here banging the drum of Christ trying to tell people what he was really talking about. And really what he was trying to talk about is how to set men free. The idea of taking the silver out of the silver coins of the United States and making them iron coin is just following after the ways of Hitler. And, of course, it was the Democratic Party and men like FDR who thought that was a great idea. And he was a democratic socialist, which is the same as what Adolf Hitler was a democratic socialist. That's what Nazi stands for, is the Democratic Socialist Party. And Hitler said, gold in the hands of the public is the enemy of the state. And evidently FDR thought the same thing. I was talking to someone whose father worked for Hitler, and I pointed out to him, you know, FDR and Hitler were on the same side. They were on the side of democratic socialism. And Marx was on the same side as them, because he thought socialism was great. He thought democracy was great because democracy leads to socialism and socialism leads to communism. So all these guys were taking the people in the same direction. The war was just to give us something to do so we wouldn't need to see what was really going on. And millions of men die in these wars, and during that, evil makes its greatest inroads because we lose sight of what is really going on. Another definition, payment is the fulfillment of a promise. So when you give somebody a note, you have not fulfilled the promise. You've just exchanged one promise for another. Back to Stanek versus White, you cannot pay a debt with a note. A portion of the debt remains, and that's called hypothecation, and that, again, is why nobody owns their property. You know, you have legal title, but legal title does not include, by definition, I'm reading right out of the definition, I'm not reading it, I've got it memorized, but legal title does not include beneficial interest. Beneficial interest is the right to use the property. So you have legal title to a car, legal title to a house, legal title to a piece of property. You don't have the right to use it because legal title doesn't include beneficial interest or beneficial use.
Things that I had no idea what those things meant, and you put things in such an interesting perspective. I just can't tell you enough how much I appreciate you being here.
Well, I'm glad somebody does. Everybody, there's a chat room with this program I guess, which is, if anybody wants to get in the chat room and ask a question, and I guess there's a phone number, which is the same number I called in, so I could give that out now.
Yes, you can. Yes, you can.
Okay, I can give that out. I got it right here, 347-324-3704. So if anybody has any questions, they can call in with those questions. But we're going to try to get to a lot of things, a lot of perspectives that people just don't understand about money. Let's go right to the golden calf. People think, oh, well, we don't bow down and worship idols because we don't have a golden calf. As a matter of fact, everybody does bow down and worship idols, and they do it every day. Exactly what those people were doing wrong when they created the golden calf. And all Americans have done this, and they've done it a long time ago, but they're not even as smart about it as the people were at the time of Moses. And they've already gone way past those guys screwing up. And what it was is those people, when they left Egypt, they were showered with gold and silver by the people. But more than that, they actually had possession. If you read Philos, they actually owned the gold. You remember when they went into bondage, all the gold was in the hands of the government, Pharaoh. And what did people use as money when all the gold was in the hands of the government? Well, they used little scarabs, clay scarabs. They also used rice paper, but clay scarabs was the most permanent form of money. And there would be little markings on it which tell you the denomination. Even a blind man could hold the clay scarab and know what value it had. And that was used as an exchange for goods and services. And those markings were put on there by the government because all the money was issued by the government. And they used that as an exchange amongst themselves, but it really didn't have much value outside of Egypt, although some people would take it. But the farther away from Egypt you were, the less likely they would be interested in those scarabs. So it demanded a certain amount of loyalty. If you just took off across the desert with a bunch of scarabs in your pocket, the farther you got away from Egypt, the less value that money would have. And it would depreciate immediately, kind of like driving a new car off the lot. Suddenly it's worth less because you just drove it onto the street. So as soon as you leave Egypt, the money is worth less. But this was a common way in which city-states demanded the loyalty of the people, is by keeping all the gold and silver in a single depository. Well, if you're moving around, you're not going to be moving around with a giant vault. So what they did was they melted it all down and pounded it out into leaf, and then they put that leaf onto a statue, and that statue sat in the middle of the town or in a building sometimes, but you could keep an eye on it. If there was a horn missing, somebody robbed a bank. And that's what that was. That was a central depository of all the valuable commodities you had that were easily portable. And if enemies attacked and you decided to flee instead of fight and not stay in to defend your neighbor, you could, if you had your money in your pocket, you could just take off over the hill with a handful of gold coins and you'd still be wealthy wherever you showed up. But if all your gold was in the golden calf, your loyalty was commanded, because if you left, you left a pauper. Now, you might still leave, but you had an investment, and that kept you loyal. Moses said, no, you can't have a free society with that kind of loyalty. You need to carry your gold and silver in your pockets, in your own purse, and not put it into a central treasury like Athens did and all the Corinth and many of these other city-states. They all had golden statues. They even called it the reserve fund in Athens, and occasionally during war, they'd be sawing off part of the statue, melting it down into coin to pay the army. That's what the golden statue was all about. It wasn't about any superstition or a bunch of ladies dancing around a golden calf like they do in the Hollywood movies. These guys were a lot more practical. They were dealing with a lot more serious problems. And the idea of putting all your wealth into a central spot where somebody can come in and steal it, or thieves and robbers, you know, can make more scarabs than is reasonable until inflation eats up your value of what's in your pocket, that's what you don't want. And that's what Christ preached again. Don't have the central treasury. Have the money in your pocket, because that's the way they were going at the time of Christ, too. And that's why Ephesus was a world bank. and the Christians were accused of robbing it. It had the largest depository of any and most secure vault in all the Mediterranean. And Christ said, no, the vault should be in the homes of every household. And that's where the money should be kept. And one of the things we talked about in an earlier program was the idea of who issues the money. Should government have the right to issue money? People say, well, government has always issued money. Balderdash. That's the politest word I can use to describe that idea. I've got a few others I could use, but we won't do that on the air. I don't usually do that anyway. But that is a bunch of hooey. I can put that on my garden and grow tomatoes. That is ridiculous. Money has always been issued by the people. This idea that only government issues money is a recent aberration in history. Yes, it happened in the time of Rome. You see the Roman golden coins with the emperor's face on it. Most people don't realize it, that those golden coins actually belong to the emperor. He made them because it was his gold. It wasn't government gold, it was his gold. And he made those coins and invested it in things like harbors, roads, trade centers, coliseums, and then charged people to go to those coliseums, roads, harbors, etc. And they had to pay the fees in what? That coin. So that would go back to him plus interest. And it made his coins even more valuable than the gold itself because it was stamped by him. Now, if you look up the definition of coin, it'll give you several definitions, and the most predominant one we find in our dictionaries today is this, you know, metal that is stamped by an authority. Well, the first dollars were thalers, were come out of a silver mine, I think, in Saxony, and it was stamped by the proper authorities, which was the owner of the mine.
Mm-hmm.
Money should be produced by the people, by the individual. If you're going to have a government of the people, for the people, and by the people, the money should be introduced and produced by them, not by a civil authority created by them, not by the government, but by that individual. Now, the government can regulate certain things like weights and measures. They can say, you know, somewhere in their vault they keep a pound of iron, and they say this is a pound, and everybody comes there and they weigh it on a scale and they make their iron ball, and that's a pound, and we keep this standard, and so they can have those certain standard weights and measures. But when the government says an ounce of gold is worth silver, 20 silver ounces, or now they say an ounce of gold is worth 50 silver ounces, when they can stamp a coin and say that, you're outside of the realm of commodity money. You're no longer in the realm of commodity money. And the only reason they do that is so they can tax you. And so that they can say, this is, you have to pay in the coin of the realm. Well, that's the coin of their realm. We should be paying for things in the coin that we make ourselves. Real coin that we make ourselves. Now, we can also issue notes. For 100 years in this country, most of the notes that were in circulation were issued by private banks. And, I'll just throw in this little bit at this point, is that you now live in a cashless society. Americans live in a cashless society. When you go down and give a Federal Reserve note at the grocery store, that's not cash. I mean, we call it cash now, but in 1850, that would not be called cash. That would be called a note. Stores would reject, stores who were cash only would not take a note even from the king himself, because a note is not cash. A note is a note. It's not hard to figure out. So we already live in a cashless society. We've just been dumbed down to thinking that a note is payment, that a note is cash, that a note is money. It can be used as if it was money, but that's only in your mind. That's not the original definitions. And then that we've been ruled by fraudulent ideas that have come to us through our public school that just aren't so. And, you know, we can verify all this. And the article Money versus Mammon, we go into it in fairly good detail. Conversion versus reconversion goes into it. Mammon is entrusted wealth. It's not money necessarily. It's just entrusted wealth. If you have notes in your pocket instead of cash, instead of commodity, instead of gold and silver or whatever your commodity is,
right,
those notes in your pocket represent mammon, because you trust the guys who made the notes. Now, I could make a note, and I said, this note is worth 2 sheep. To anybody, to the bearer of this note, I will give them 2 sheep. And I give them that note, and they go off and they trade it with somebody else for a couple bags of grain. And then that guy brings the note to me and says, I got a note here that says it's worth 2 sheep to the bearer, and I give him the 2 sheep. Well, I created money with that note. But people around here, they would trust me for that because they know I'm good for it. And they could see my sheep running up and down the hills all the time. They look out there, yeah, 2 of those sheep out there are mine when I need them. So, and they just don't have a place to keep them, so I would keep them, and then they come and get it. And that's perfectly okay. That's a private note between me and them. But it can be used as money. And that's okay, but you need to do that in a very limited fashion. You want to have a commodity money. And this is why I brought up this idea of stamping coins. When you stamp a gold coin and say it's worth 20 silver coins, you have said something more on that stamp than that this is an ounce. Anyone who produces bullion, we have someone in the network who's in the business, and they can show you how to set it up so you can produce your own bullion and make your own coins. And
wow.
Your own, it's not that complicated. It's a pretty simple process. But if you're going to do it right, in order to develop a reputation, you got to be a little thorough about it. But the reality is that they would stamp those coins, or the bullion. We'd call them bullion. Coins is developed. Coin can be just a round of any kind of metal whatsoever. But it's become, because they've moved that definition up to the front where it's by a proper authority, it can create the possibility, a cloudy area of legalism that will come in and try to give you a hard time. But if you keep calling it bullion, you're probably okay, or an artifact. But anyway, you make a 1 ounce piece of gold in any shape you want. You pour it into a little mold, and then you take a stamping tool and you stamp on it. You weigh it out with good scales, and you say, this is 1 troy ounce, and I made it. You stamp that on there on this date. You stamp that on there. You don't stamp on there, it's worth 20 silver dollars. So all you're doing is identifying what you made. And now that can go into circulation just like my note for 2 sheep. And it has value. And the more it circulates around, the more people know. That's, like I say, that's how the dollar got to be called the dollar, is because a guy named Thaler, I may be pronouncing the German wrong, but that's close enough. I have relatives that were Tholens. But anyway, came out of that silver mine, and people trusted it. Now, somebody else who's a silver miner could make a poor quality of it, and they could stamp it and make it look like it come out of Thaler. But if they wrote, put his seal on it, that was a lie. That would be counterfeiting. Now, the guy could take a civil case against the guy for counterfeiting it. But the fact is it's very easy to test the quality of silver and gold, and everybody should know how to do that. And trade with those people you know and trust, and have somebody in your community that knows how to do it and shows you how to do it. And now you're becoming the government of the people, for the people, and by the people. Instead of depending on some bureaucracy that you created and said, you go off and create everything for me, and then I'll come by, and then I'll use your money. Now, you don't want to do that. You want to take that responsibility on yourself, and it's easier to do if you come together in small groups of people who work for those long-term kingdom-like goals. This is what Israel did originally. It's when they started looking to some central authority that they got into trouble. And so, anyway, you can see how this money thing can start touching every aspect of your life. If you're walking around using notes instead of actual commodity money, like I said, when a coin is stamped by a governmental authority saying that this coin is worth, you know, an ounce of gold, which is, you know, a dollar is actually a weight of measure. It's a measure of weight. So a dollar of gold is a troy ounce. A dollar of silver would be about a troy ounce. And you can't say the market determines how many ounces of silver it takes to buy an ounce of gold. If somebody stamps on it, they've stepped outside. It's no longer commodity money. It's now something else. And you want to stay away from that. If there are notes, the note should be signed by an individual saying that I'm responsible for the payment of this note. And you go back to that individual and you deal with it. In the meantime, you could still use Federal Reserve notes and all these other things, but know that it will fail. This is why Jesus was talking about things like the unrighteous mammon. He says, be friends with the unrighteous mammon. Because everybody was in a system much like what we have today. They had moved from a free society into a statutory corvée system of bondage where a portion of their labor belonged to the government. And this had taken place partly during the time of the Hasmoneans, about 78 B.C. There were some more statutes that came down from the Sanhedrin. And by the time of Jesus Christ, after 50 years of Herod's rule, or at least 25 years of Herod's rule, the people were back in the bondage of Egypt again, and they had income tax, property tax, sales tax, everything. And Jesus talked about that system as Corban and unrighteous mammon, and he says, be friends with it. In other words, pay your taxes, the same as Moses said, but start gleaning in the field at night for your benefit. Start learning what a free society really looks like. Start learning how to take care of yourself and take back. You want to be free, you have to take back your responsibilities. You don't get your rights by demanding them. You get your rights by demanding to take on the responsibility of those rights. That's how you lost your rights. You gave up your responsibility. You said somebody else is now going to be responsible. So we're at the half-hour mark. I think we need to go into a break here.
We are. Thank you very much. You're listening to the Sabbath Hour here at Freedomizer Radio, and we will be right back. We're back, and our host today is Brother Gregory from hisholychurch.org, and the subject is money. I didn't know what the subject was going to be today. You surprised me. It's been a subject that banters around quite a bit here on Freedomizer Radio, and it's very interesting to hear your perspective and get just this whole other view. So thank you very much.
I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Back to the subject of money. Whoever controls the volume of money in any country is absolute master of all industry and commerce. And that was President James Garfield. That's why if you're going to have a free government of the people, for the people, and by the people, you need to have money created by the people, for the people. And that's as simple as that. And I've shown you a couple of ways in which you could do that. But you can also see the almost insurmountable problem that we have in doing that today, because we've gone so far away from what a really free government looks like that we haven't got a clue as to what that free government really is and how it works. We need to change and start changing the way in which we handle these problems. It's going to take a little while to get that in place. There isn't going to be any sudden little legislation and then boom, wham, we're all free again. You're not going to be able to sign a few papers and then suddenly everybody's free again. We've entered into a huge complex system of debt and adhesion contracts. People like to use the word adhesion. They're constructive contracts. But even a constructive contract over a period of time with debt can become an executed contract. And that's actually what's taking place with the money system. This whole Federal Reserve System was doomed to fail from the beginning. It's not meant to actually pay anybody back. It's meant to bring everybody into debt because debt is bondage. And that's what it was designed. And it's not a new system. It's an old system. It's a very clever system, but it's not as clever as Christ. And Christ was telling people how to really operate in a free society. But it's only a free society is only for the virtuous. I don't know how many times in the book Higher Liberty I quote early Americans like Adams and Jefferson and Washington, who are constantly saying that a free society is only, a free government is only for the virtuous. And virtue includes having to care about each other as much as you care about yourself. And the idea of giving somebody a note, you know, I've used to go and my kids used to, well, they thought it was funny for a while, and I'm sure they didn't think it was funny all the time, but they were very patient with me, but we'd be in a store. And there'd be, I do this mostly when there was a big line behind me. And we would be buying something, and maybe it came to about 80 bucks or something. And after the cash register rang it all up, I said, do you want money for this, or will you take a note? And they look at you just absolutely stunned. They said, we have that money. And it says, so you won't take a note? And then I hold up a $100 bill. And I said, you won't take a note? And they said, oh, we'll take that. I said, well, this is a note. And then I'll throw a handful of silver coins, maybe a gold coin on the counter. I don't throw a gold coin on the counter anymore, but they're expensive. But I throw that on. I said, this is money. This is a note. So you do take notes. Oh, yeah, we take those notes. Anyway, the bigger the crowd, the funner that is. So anyway, sometimes I've actually gathered around me about 15, 20 people right there in the store or gas station and gave them a lecture on what is money and what is not money.
And spread the word.
Spread the word. One gas station at a time. So that's fun. So anyway, and the ramifications of the fact that you're giving not your note in payment for things. You know, it's one thing if you're buying a can of soup at the store. It's another thing if you're buying your property that you're going to live on. You can't pay for that with a note. You because then you'll never get the lawful title, and that is cognizable in every court. And that's why your property is now, that is one of the reasons why your property is now under property tax. Americans came here to actually own property. Early settlers came here, the pilgrims came here to actually own the property so that it would not be taxed. They didn't even understand how that worked, but the more they began to learn, they realized that that was important, and they paid off their debts with substance. And they ended up owning property that could not be taxed. But only about a third, not even quite a third, of the Americans were property class. They that actually owned their property and could not be taxed. That was rare to find people who had that endeavor etched in their heart to make it to that point where they actually owned land that could not be taxed. But now there's several layers to this bondage now, not just the land. And if you look up the definition of a free man, in today's Oxford Dictionary, it is someone having a freehold title in land. It is someone owning land that cannot be taxed. So how many people do you know that own land that cannot be taxed? I hear lots of claims.
Yeah, I don't know anyone. Not anyone.
Say again?
Personally. I don't know anyone personally.
Okay, yeah, right. Well, we've had a number of people over the years that have made claims that they've got land patents and they don't pay property tax, and people go and buy their land patent package. I know one guy sold at least $100,000 worth of land patent packages over a period of about 5 years, claiming that he never paid taxes. You know, it took us about an hour to investigate that, And we called up the county, we found out where the property was, found out what the legal description was, and called up the county and said, does anybody pay property tax on that land? And the response was, yeah. I said, who? Well, it was a small enough town. They said, well, his mom comes in every year and pays tax. So that's what was going on. But he was making lots of money selling people land patent packages that were guaranteeing them that they would not have to pay property tax if they filled out all this stuff and jumped it, you know. And of course, he made lots of money doing that. And I know another guy was doing the same thing just recently. It wasn't land patents, but it was something similar. And we caught him. You know, we found out where it was, and we took it to him first, and we said, hey, look, according to them, your dad comes in every year and pays the taxes on this property. And this is the property that looks like you're talking about. Is there another property that you're talking about? Have we made a mistake? We took it straight to the guy, and his response was, who made you a policeman? He never denied it. Tried to make all kinds of excuses, but the fact is that's the property. There is taxes being paid on it, yet he's selling recordings and memberships all based on the idea that he's off the tax rolls, and he's not. So you have to be very careful about these. Now, I'm not saying everybody is lying about that, but I haven't found anybody I can prove that's telling the truth in any, you know, any verifiable way on that subject. So there's a lot of charlatans out there. Now, I tell you that there will come a day in America where there will not be property tax and everybody will be free. There will come a day that will be true. That's my personal prophecy. I don't know when that's going to happen, but I don't think it's all that far away. But everybody's not going to survive freedom. They're just not going to survive it because they haven't taken on the responsibilities of freedom. And one of those responsibilities is to develop your own money system. But that money system must be based on sound law, where the value of the money is in your pocket. If you have a note, according to the biblical principles, you shouldn't let the debt set on a debt. I mean, the night, sun set on a debt. But in the case of when I gave you the example of a note from me that I owe you two sheep, I don't usually do that. But, you know, I could see that might be reasonable for somebody who doesn't have a place to keep the sheep and they're going to have a sheep later on and I'll hold on to it for them. But that's a personal trust thing. I would much rather tell them, well, just, you know, make a trade when you can. But, you know, I've done trades with people that have gone on for over a year before we finally settled up. But those are personal agreements. But there's all kinds of things at your disposal to make these exchanges. Here's a question. Why do you pay gold or silver for land? I mean, Abraham made it very clear. He owned no land. He was extremely wealthy. He was considered the prince of a kingdom. He was married to Sarai and Haggai. Haggai was an Egyptian princess. She wasn't just some slave. And yet he owned no land. The only land he bought as a cemetery plot. And there's a whole reason for this. And we go into that in the book, Thy Kingdom Come. But the point is, the guy who was going to give him the land said, I'll just give it to you. And he says, no, we have to do this right according to the law. And he counted out the silver in front of witnesses. Why silver for the land? Well, it's really simple. Silver is land. Silver is dirt. Gold is dirt. It's just highly refined dirt. You know, compost is dirt. It takes a lot more compost to equal the value of a gold coin. So a gold coin is portable land. You can put 10 gold coins in your pocket or 20 gold coins in your pocket and you walk around. That's worth near $40,000. It's getting so that the gold coin is less bulky than the paper notes. People used to say, well, you know, coin is so bulky, you know, carry around. Give me some bulk. I'll take the bulk. Because right now, you know, a single gold coin, I don't know what it is, $1,700, $1,900. I mean, it's been up that high. and it's probably going to go to $3,000-$4,000. Now, I'm not an advocate of everybody going out and buying gold. I'm an advocate of the kingdom. And the kingdom is to getting together in a network of people that have the same values, have the same virtues, have the same principles, care about your rights as much as they care about their own, because that's people willing to take back their responsibilities. Because those are the people that you're going to need. Now, you're going to find those people also interested in things like gold and silver money. You're also find them interested in commodity exchange. But the important thing is the virtue that they're going to have for each other. I tell you, if we were doing what Christ was doing, what Abraham was doing, what John the Baptist was doing, if the Christians, all the people claiming to be Christians, were really doing what the early church was doing, you wouldn't have all this weather modification now. You wouldn't have all this injustice in the courts now. I know of a guy who's, I won't even say what state he's in, but they don't like it that he's homeschooling. And so they're trying to trump up a deal where they force his son to go to their public schools. And they're trying to legislate from the bench. And the judge hadn't done it yet, but the judge is twisting his arm a little bit and making life a little difficult for him, to say the least. Every single church in that community should skip going to church on Sunday or Sabbath and get down there to the courthouse on Monday morning and say to the judge, what is the deal here? This is a good guy. He's a hardworking guy. He's taking care of his family. And why are you giving him a hassle?
That would be the right thing to do.
Yeah. Yeah, but getting churches to do the right thing, it's like trying to get a Baptist to dance.
Oh my goodness. Well, we do spend a lot of time on our programs, on the Free State program that starts at 4 today, and also on Freedom Reign, speaking about the Regal system, or the Regal exchange, which is an exchange of value between people as opposed to Federal Reserve notes. So this really falls into a lot of things that we talk about here on Freedomizer Radio. So
right, and you know, that's partly why I brought this subject up, is that I heard, you know, I came in at the last little bit of your show last week, and after, you know, I had to go and do some errands, and then I came back and tried to catch a little bit of it, and I listened to him, Lawrence, I think it was, talking about the Regal system, and then I went to the website and read a little bit of it, and the thing is that we don't want, if you want to maintain a free society, you don't want to put all your eggs in one basket. There's lots of different ways in which you can operate and exchange and make exchanges. And a substantive money in your pocket is really the best way to go. In transition, there may be a number of other things, but you also have to have the realization that most of the people in the country, I mean, like I was showing with my one gas station at a time approach to explaining money, most people haven't got a clue. They are not going to change over, and they don't have to change over. Most people do not want to be free. Most people do not want the responsibility of freedom. So whatever you do, you have to realize that it's going to, in order for it to grow, it has to start at a grassroots level and start working amongst people who are actually taking the time. And this is what's really hard to find, is the people who are actually taking the time to be free as a society. All kind, you know, Moses did not take people to the edge of the desert and say, you're free, run for it, one at a time. He taught the people how to come together and take care of one another in time of famine, in time of shortages, in time of difficulty. And then, once they learned how to do that and operate as a free society without looking to the welfare of the governments who exercise authority one over the other, the same exact thing that Christ was talking about from the beginning to the end of the New Testament, then they were ready to be free. Had they just left right away, it would have been like herding cats across the desert. And a number of us have joked about this. Somebody pointed out, I said it's like herding cats because, you know, they don't stick together and everything's running every different direction and they're all independent. And he says, well, it's not hard to herd cats with a can of tuna. You just pull that tuna can out there and they keep on coming. And so the out of that little chuckle that we all got from him, and I said, so what you want us to do is create a tuna republic. But like Marx said, democracy, he loves democracy because it leads to socialism, and socialism leads to the communism. Well, a tuna republic leads to democracy. Democracy leads to socialism because you cannot lead people by offering them a benefit. That's how we got into this trouble. That's how we got into this animal farm, as they put corn in the pen and they said, yeah, it's free, just come on in. And they came in and ate a little corn, and they kept doing that, and then somebody slammed the gate. And everybody says, hey, I don't want to stay in here. Well, you've been eating the corn for free. You went to public school. I mean, people are worried about socialism when they see Obamacare. What about public school? That's socialism. You're forcing your neighbor to pay for your child's education at the point of a gun. And we call it public education. If you don't want to pay, the men with guns will come to your house and take your house away from you. That's pretty much coveting your neighbor's goods. Because you want that public education. I can't wait till those kids are in school again. No, you have to go back to home health care, home education. In order to make that work in any society, you need to have community helping you out. Because, I mean, we were pretty fortunate. My wife stayed healthy. I stayed healthy. We always got enough work. We lived outside pretty much the system. But we were pretty independent. And we raised 6 kids, and they were all home taught. But some people, it's not that easy. Some people are going to need help, and that's why you need to form those congregations or communities. That's why if you go back and read The Enterprise of Law, he points out that the majority of governments throughout the history of man have been voluntary systems based on this concept of 10 hundreds and thousands, of 10 families getting together and picking a minister who merely represents them, doesn't make law. Doesn't go down. He's not a lawmaker. He represents their viewpoint, and he works to see to it that the needy of his society is taken care of, but he also works with other ministers like himself so that they are not just isolated congregations, but they are actually a national government. When you see the apostles referring to the Gentiles, they're using a Greek word there, ethnos, which means other nations. Early Christians were a nation. They were referred to as a viable republic in the heart of the Roman Empire by one of the most noted historians of that time, which actually he was a historian in 1776, which was Edward Gibbons. So anyway, Edward Gibbons referred to the early Christian church as a viable republic in the heart of the Roman Empire. And in our article or essay on republics, Republic versus Democracy, we show that the United States Constitution did not create a republic. It created an indirect democracy, and it was created by the states. A republic is what it was created in. It was already a republic here. There's a republic in America in 1619. Actually, Cromwell even sent troops over to defend the American Republic. In way back in the 1600s, the United States American Creed even states the United States is a democracy within a republic. Right. And a republic, a pure republic, the leaders are titular. They're not lawmakers. They can't make law for you. You make law in the courts when you're a jury deciding fact and law. And we don't understand how that works either, and maybe that'll be a great topic for next week's show, is what is a real republic, a pure republic? Because most people don't know. And when we put out the Kingdom News letter this week, we may focus on that subject, what a republic is, because most people don't understand that anymore. They don't understand money. So what we've done anyway is we've created a Federal Reserve System just like the Federal Reserve System. At the time of the bondage in Egypt, not only does 20% of our labor go to the government, as it did when we were in bondage in Egypt, now 30%, 40%, and 50% go, because it's worse with us than it was with them. We don't have any gold and silver in our pockets because we've thrown it all in the streets. Everybody always refers to that prophecy where they would throw their gold and silver in the streets, And they say, so we don't need gold and silver. Well, they don't have it anyway because they've already thrown it away. The word streets there actually is a metaphor for the city, for the city state. And you don't even have the brains to put a, you know, people in general don't even have, Americans don't even have the brains to have a golden calf where they can keep an eye on it. They've got it all supposedly in Fort Knox where there hasn't been an audit in, what, 60 years? They don't even know if it's in there. And if it is in there, they don't even know who owns it. If every American had one gold coin in their pockets, the people would have more money, more gold reserve than there was ever in the Fort Knox. I think that's an accurate statement. It'd be 360 million ounces. I don't think there's been that much in Fort Knox. Somebody can call in and tell me if I'm wrong, but they don't have much time to do it.
It just went by so quickly. I mean, there was so, my head is just still, I'm going to have to listen to this a couple times.
Well, we have a number of recordings and even a video out on Money versus Mammon on the website at hisholychurch.org. If anybody wants to go and listen to those, we can keep them busy listening for days.
Well, we certainly appreciate you being here, and thank you so much for bringing this very important subject to light and giving us these wonderful perspectives. Just, it's very, very much appreciated.
I thank you for having me.
Okay, thank you.
God bless. Bye.
God bless. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to The Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church. For more information on the educational ministry provided by His Holy Church and Brother Gregory, including services, counseling, lectures, books, and other audio materials, please write to His Church at Summer Lake, Box 10, Summer Lake, Oregon, 97640. You can also find us on the web at www.hisholychurch.net.